Jesus fucks.
Get ready for the miracle of Mega, a comedy podcast from the staff of a fictional mega church.
And not only does he fuck, but he's the best at it.
I'm Holly Loren.
And I'm Greg Hess.
Our characters, Hallie and Gray, welcome a new guest each week, played by some of the biggest names in comedy and podcasting.
Like Scott Aukerman, Lauren Lapkus, Paul Scheer, Jason Mantzoukas, Cecily Strong, and Duncan Trussell.
I just love to think about that, the light shining down on all those corpses in the water and Noah just going by and maybe a mom being like, please, we're running out of energy. Can you please let us on the boat?
It's completely improvised and it's devilishly funny.
Is there any question you have for us about, you know, what it means to live a life in Christ?
I guess, how much do you think is bullshit?
There's a new episode every Sunday.
Listen and subscribe to Mega, wherever you get your podcasts.
Best I ever had. Best I... Y'all can do it. Y'all can do it. Y'all sing along. You know what I'm saying? Here go. Jesus, you the best.
Jesus, you're the best.
You to be the best.
Jesus, you're
Jesus,
the best.
You the best. Okay, never mind.
Best I ever had. Best wow. I ever had.
Have you ever wondered why we call French fries French fries? Or why something is the greatest thing since sliced bread? There are answers to those questions. Everything Everywhere Daily is a podcast for curious people who want to learn more about the world around them. Every day, you'll learn something new about things you never knew you didn't know. Subjects include history, science, geography, mathematics, and culture. If you're a curious person and want to learn more about the world you live in, just subscribe to Everything Everywhere Daily wherever you cast your pod.
Coming to you live from the Ray Horseman Studio in North Hollywood, California, it's Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, your comedy field guide to life. On tonight's show, Career Corner, does Paula have the skill to make it as a zookeeper? Gary Wilson, professor in the Exotic Animal and Training Management Program at Moorpark College, is here to tell us if Paula's litter-scooping skills can be applied to cleaning up after larger animals like lions and tigers and bears. Oh, mercy! Then, later, the Thomas Coyne Affair, the world's largest manhunt, is still on for our missing survivalist. And new information about last week's Hawaiian potato chip advertising claim has come to light. I'm Adam Felber, the guy who's here to tame the conversational beast. And now, please welcome the woman who is that beast, Paula Poundstone!
Adam.
Welcome, Paula, and thank you to tonight's house band percussionist Omar Leyva. Now, Paula, I understand that you actually took some advice from our podiatrist, Dr. Levine, who we had on just last week.
I did. He said everyone should have compression socks.
He's and a big so advocate. You made us feel like he had a piece of big compression.
Yeah, I'm not sure that he's not getting kickbacks on this advice, but
totally possible.
I got some compression socks because, you know, I had like pains in the bottom of my feet when I would run. And So I got compression socks. And I have to say, my feet don't seem to hurt as much. However,
but you stopped running.
Well, I haven't been running. I've just had them up in these compression socks.
This is luxurious.
The compression socks themselves have left deep furrows in the pattern of the weave on the skin of my calf. My calves look like fields during planting season.
I see. So you're saying the pattern of the weave of the sock, not the pattern of the weave of your leg.
No, not the weave of my leg. My legs are not woven, so it's the pattern of the sock. I do think it's helping my circulation.
Are you wearing them now?
I am wearing them now.
Do you want to extend the gam this way so I can take a look?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Look. Huh?
Wow.
Can you see
they go
that?
All the way
that
up.
Is
they
a
look
thing
like
of beauty.
Like a young German boy's knickerbockers.
I'm pretty sure that they've improved my circulation because last night while I was sleeping on the floor, I looked on the ceiling and my feet were up there doing river dance.
Wow.
And so I'm pretty
sure. Really compressing your shit.
They are
there.
Really compressing.
I mean, I could see like the top of your calf is like trying to escape.
What I did was I called my neighbors from the neighborhood watch call list to come help me get them on.
Sure, it's not the first time.
Yeah, it's not easy to get them on. They are very, you know.
Did you take our podiatrist's advice?
And get roustabouts?
You don't listen to our show, do you? Because he had some advice for how to put on compression socks.
Yeah, well, you squish them together like you're doing a stuff sack is how you do it.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, so you did?
Yeah,
okay.
Sure I did.
Okay.
I that's what I asked my neighbors to do from the neighborhood watch.
And eventually the whole team was able to get the socks on?
Yeah. You could hear if you walk by my house that night, you could hear like, oh!
Wow.
Wow.
All right, fellas, all together now.
So you haven't taken them off since, I'm guessing.
No, I haven't taken them off. I was hoping that you guys might help me later.
Oh, maybe. I mean, some of us have back problems and whatnot.
Yeah, but, yeah, I couldn't get them off, for Christ's sakes.
Really?
They are wedged on there.
But you had an adventure buying them, I understand.
Well, no, it's just that they were more expensive than I had
How much
thought.
More?
Well, I'm not certain because I bought my daughter some socks, too. I think it was something. I got three pair.
Okay.
I had the Pod Puppy with me because I got
new
puppy.
By the way, you brought Pod Puppy here tonight.
I did.
You left Pod Dog home and brought Pod Puppy.
The Pod Dog is at home crying. So I brought the puppy with me into the running store where I got the socks. And I was holding her in my arms because I didn't want her to pee on their floor or anything.
Okay.
And so I said to the clerk, who was very helpful, I said, "Do you have compression socks?" She sewed me. I'm like, "Yeah, okay, good, that." And I got three pair. And
okay.
I think it was like $100.
Really?
For three pairs.
Well, you bought Allie socks too.
Yeah, but that was another, I think it was like $125 for the compression
socks.
About
$100 of that was compression
socks. And then it was like $25 was for the
Allie socks. So I'm no mathematician, but it sounds like you're saying compression socks go at like $33 a pair.
You don't crush your calves inexpensively.
I guess not. But
I'm not sure, by the way, how crushing your calves does make for circulation.
Dr. Levine did explain it.
He explain that?
Yeah, he did.
What did he say?
Oh, at length.
Yeah. It was at length.
I'm going to send you the link to our podcast someday.
That's a good idea.
You're going to love some of the pearls of wisdom that come out of our experts' mouths while you're talking.
I don't remember that at all. Well, you know, I have memory problems.
That's right.
We talked about on another show.
How do you remember that?
That's all I can remember.
Sticks out?
I don't remember what he said.
Well, Dr. Levine said that when you compress the foot, I barely.
Yeah,
remember.
Yeah, exactly.
But he did explain it. It forces the blood up.
That's what happened.
Yeah, so the blood is in other places.
Yeah,
in your
the
body
blood
now.
Is up right
Hopefully
now.
Hopefully, your
you
brain.
See,
this is supposed to help
you
with the memory
one
bar
breast
problem.
Seems expensive.
Yeah, one of them has ballooned.
Yeah. That's where all the blood went today.
Yeah, you're like a B cup and a triple D cup.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a weird.
Just all the blood went in one direction.
You should try pushing on that. Maybe the other one will inflate.
So wait, sorry. So I was buying compression socks.
Oh, I thought we were
done
with
you
those.
You were?
I was in Disneyland.
Oh, man.
Oh, my God. I
you got
love
the better
Disney.
Part of the deal.
I did. I took my two kids, aged 11 and 6, to Disneyland. And, you know, part of it was you, Paula, because every Christmas, Paula Poundstone gives me and my family tickets to Disneyland, and we so appreciate it. It's always a highlight every year.
We always
invite you along. You're always busy buying socks or something.
Yeah, I'm too busy getting socks to go to Disneyland. But, and how was it? Was it good?
It was good, except between 4 o'clock and like 5:30 yesterday at Disneyland, something happened that made it less than the happiest place on earth.
Between 4 and 5:30, something happened. A sad thing happened.
It wasn't sad. It was just it was trying at times. It was our weekly production meeting.
Oh, we had our production meeting on the phone.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You know, Adam, the thing is, we do this conference call, and it's challenging enough to begin with, the conference call. It's sort of the...
Bonnie Burns is part of it.
It's the cone of... Yeah. It's the cone
Captain
of silence
Crinkle and her crinkly
to
dog.
Begin with. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's almost useless.
Nobody hears anybody.
But Adam is always either cooking or he's at an amusement park. He's like Dr.
Always
Bombay from Bewitched.
I'm just popping in from everywhere.
Yeah, you never quite know where Adam is. So the whole time we were trying to discuss, this week's show, you could just hear big characters walking by Adam and roller coasters and
right,
kids
and
screaming.
Right, and Pixar tunes and whatnot.
Yeah.
For a while it was Oompa music because I thought that Main Street might be the quietest place in Disneyland.
You thought Main Street would be the quietest place?
Yeah, because there's no rides there.
Yeah.
But no.
No.
No. It turns out I even walked outside the park towards the parking lot. And those speakers that pump in the happy music,
they're everywhere.
Everywhere. There's literally nowhere to go. I walked into a bathroom, louder music than outside.
Yeah. Well, that's good, though.
Yeah, I guess that's a mercy.
Because otherwise, we'd been on the conference call hearing.
Yeah, you'd have been hearing worse. That's a park full of Americans chowing down on corn dogs and whatnot.
It would
have been terrible.
Yeah,
but you know what? I kept hoping to get back to the rides, and we did our little call. And then at one point, we were done with our call, and Captain Crinkle started talking politics.
There's a good reason for that. Did you hear that Mickey Mouse is going to be the new acting attorney general after they impeach Bill Barr? Did you hear that?
I'd heard something like
He's
that.
He's already been speaking out publicly.
That would have been relevant. Whereas what
he was
Bonnie
on
Burns
the View just
not.
This morning.
Yeah.
And he said, the president didn't do anything wrong. President Trump is a swell guy.
That's actually That's actually somewhat reminiscent of our current press secretary for the president of the United States.
Yeah.
The reason I point that out is because at one point, Tony Anita Hull, in an act of mercy, cut in, and she usually doesn't, but she said, Bonnie, he's at Disneyland.
Yeah.
And Bonnie was like, yeah, Disneyland. Anyway. And she started talking about the Mueller report.
Yeah. It's the Mueller report.
Mueller report.
Not the Mueller report.
Well, I've been mulling it over, so. The other terrible thing that happened at Disney.
Mueller report?
What's that?
Yeah, yeah.
That's the Mueller report. Maybe I've been reading the wrong report.
Yeah, I think
you sure seems guilty in that one.
President Trump is a swell guy.
Oh, also one other thing about Disney, Space Mountain.
It's called presidential harassment. America owes him 2 more years. It was stolen from the president.
Mickey Mouse is Edith Bunker, apparently.
Yeah, no, yours is good.
The president is so nice.
Stifle.
What I was going to say is the one tragedy that really did beset the day is Space Mountain broke 4 times during the day.
Yeah. What did you guys do? All four times
we were in line to get on it.
No, all 4 times you were on it. I don't know why they didn't put it together. It was you and your kids. Oh. What were you doing? Like sticking?
No, it's an old. Like, they told us. What do you have? Like
gummy bears or something? And you were putting them on the tracks?
Yeah, we were sticking gummy bears to the tracks.
Yeah. No, I don't know why you don't discipline those children.
In fact, in our third attempt, we got as close to
when Baz had like a drumstick
gate.
And he was.
Baz was pounding it with a turkey leg.
On your third attempt, there was a gate?
We got so close to being on Space Mountain
that
we were literally the next people on. We were already in that little chute where the gate opens and you get in your car.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sure.
And the lights came on and they told everybody to leave. It's an emergency.
Right. Yeah.
And I thought my son was going to have a stroke, which would be odd for an 11-year-old, but he was pretty close. Yeah. But at the end of the day, we did get on it.
Then the guy in the suit, in the space suit, that puts you on the ride, had to stop and go, the Falbers fucked up the ride again.
Yeah, it was embarrassing.
Everybody get off. Yeah. Everybody get off. Take that drumstick and the gummy bear away from those two kids.
You know, the one thing worse than a kid who's having a hemorrhage is that when you publicly shame him by a Disney employee. That's rough. No wonder he had a bad day. Making memories that last a lifetime.
Get that crying kid off the... Why isn't Adam Felber disciplined his kids? So they were they hanging on the chains and stuff?
They didn't do anything. All they did was show up and get disappointed.
Yeah.
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 That was a beautiful place. Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is a happy place.
When
we had a great day.
When your kid is unhappy at Disneyland, there's something about it that is just a burn.
I know.
You know?
It made me angry. And then I realized I have to contain my anger because that's not going to make anything better.
Well, and by the way, that's probably part of what broke Space Mountain.
My anger?
It's not just the kids. It's the guy. Look at the guy.
He's enraged.
He's breaking Space Mountain.
No, we finally got on it, though. And it's a good ride.
I love that ride. My favorite rides.
So we went on a slow day. That's why we went this week. And there were thousands and thousands of visitors, which brings me to our next point.
Yes!
We have an update on our Maximum Fun numbers.
I saw this coming, man.
Yeah.
Okay. So Maximum Fun had, you may remember, a membership drive.
Yes, they did.
And
a month ago, let's say.
It was, say, a month ago. And we said that we thought that we would get, 10,000 members.
Yes.
And they practically laughed us out of the room when we said it.
Yes, they did. They said, you know what? The entire network's goal is 25,000 new members.
Yeah.
You're not going to get 40% of that or whatever.
Yeah, which is just so negative.
It was so negative.
And so they tallied the numbers and they came up with it. What was the number that they came up with?
They came up with, we ended up with 1,260 new members.
1,260, which is very close to 10,000.
It's in the ballpark of 10,000.
We were not that far off.
It's in the 4-digit range, and 10,000 is only one off from that range.
But then, get this, Captain Kringle sent me an email saying that they had made a mistake. And I was like, yes, I knew it. I knew they made a mistake. They made a mistake. And so they recalculated.
The number was wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, eat your heart out, Disneyland. Their number was wrong.
Yes.
And what was the...
Well, there was a miscalculation,
There
was a miscalculation. And it was not...
It was not 1,200. It was not 1,260 new members. It was 1,251 new members.
Right.
Exactly. I knew they were wrong. I knew it.
You knew they were wrong. I knew they were wrong.
I should have bet the farm on that.
And I will point out that while 1,251 is arguably less than 1,260, it's still Percentage-wise, it's just as close to 10,000
as we were
before. It's
so close to 10,000.
Yeah.
If you're going to
rounding error.
Split hairs like that.
And I'm
I don't know if you heard this, but apparently Mickey Mouse is the new accountant over at Maximum Fun.
Oh, is he?
Yeah. It was almost 10,000.
That's what he said?
Yeah.
He's been getting a lot of jobs lately.
He's not that good at counting because he only has three fingers.
Oh, he's so silly. Yeah, he's working
1,251. Oh, shit. It was close.
Now tell me, is he occupying all these jobs in your world because that's the cartoon voice you can do?
No, I can do a lot of cartoon voices.
Can you?
Yeah.
Can you do like a Donald Duck, a critical Donald Duck?
Sure I can.
See, now, I don't want to burst your bubble here, Paula, but that sounded a lot like Mickey Mouse.
Hey,
do a Goofy.
Mickey Mouse is my best friend.
Okay, I think I see where we're going here.
Here's my Goofy, Adam.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
President Trump. He's a swell guy.
He's the kindest, most decent. And once again,
he's like Jesus. He's a lot like Jesus.
I don't know why I can't keep, you know, Queens, New York from creeping into my Mickey Mouse, but it goes in his bunker every time.
It's because you're from...
I'm from New York.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Songs that made the hit parade.
Well, apparently Maximum Fun was very... apologetic.
They were contrite. They sent like a long email explaining how they could have been so horribly wrong with those numbers.
But they tend to send long emails, let's be honest.
Well, so does Bonnie Burns.
Yeah, yeah. Those guys get...
I mean, honestly, when Bonnie forwards you an email from Maximum Fun, you know, just settle in with a glass of sherry for the night because you are not going to get to the point anytime before midnight.
You know what I think happens is that a lot of people who work at Maximum Fun don't get along that well, and so they'll have like some sort of group meeting, and one of the people writing the email will go, no, I'm busy writing the email, and they just make it longer and longer and longer.
It's an emotional thing.
Yeah,
they squirrel themselves away in their
cubicles.
They
write sentences like very, 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 very. They a lot of
they don't actually. But
they do.
They really.
Yeah, they do, Adam.
Oh, well, if their accountant says so, I have to trust that.
I work there now. I've been there for 1, 2, 3 days.
That means any number of days, Mickey, as we've already...
I can count on one hand the amount of days I've been there.
Hey, Paula, it's been almost a year now since I got my Helix mattress. And as you remember, there was some drama surrounding Helix mattresses.
Because
First sponsored us, Bonnie took the mattress. And she's been loving it. But finally, I got my chance to get a Helix mattress. And I sleep so well. I mean, the family bed is where we all gather. We watch movies in our room occasionally. And everybody just piles on it. And it's comfy. And yet, when one person hops on, the other half of the mattress doesn't fly up. I'm a fan.
Well, you know, Adam, everybody is unique and everyone sleeps differently. That's why Helix has several different mattress models to choose from, each designed for specific sleep positions and feel preferences. Models with memory foam layers to provide optimal pressure relief if you sleep on your side. Models with a more responsive foam to cradle your body for essential support in stomach and back sleeping positions. Plus, enhanced cooling features to keep you from overheating at night. And if your spine needs some extra TLC, they got you. Every Helix mattress has a hybrid design combining individually wrapped steel coils in the base with premium foam layers on top. It is the perfect combination of comfort and support.
I agree with that last bit. I don't get all the technical stuff about the mattress, but it is soft and supportive. Helix offers 20 unique mattresses, the award-winning Lux, which I got, and ultra-premium Elite Collections, the Helix Plus, a mattress designed for big and tall sleepers, and the Helix Kids mattress, designed for growing bodies and endorsed by child sleep experts, and my daughter now wants one. So, how will you know which Helix mattress works best for you and your body? You go to their website, take the Helix Sleep Quiz, and you find your perfect mattress match in under 2 minutes.
You know, when you said you can't follow all the technical stuff, it's really not that technical. You know, no matter what way you sleep, they have a mattress that will support and comfort you. How hard is that?
You know, when you say it that way, it seems a lot simpler. I take it back. That's my boner.
And your personalized mattress is shipped straight to your door, free of charge. And Helix knows there's no better way to test out a new mattress than by sleeping on it in your own home. That's why they offer a 100-night trial and a 10 to 15-year warranty to try out your new Helix mattress.
Well, I like that there's a warranty, but they can pry that mattress from my cold, dead hands. I took the sleep quiz. I was matched with the Helix Midnight Lux. I got the Lux. And I love it. It is such an upgrade from my old mattress.
You know, I think Bonnie got the midnight lux.
She did.
Too.
Yeah.
You're not here. Don't want to take Adam's word for it? Well, you got Bonnie's word. Helix has been awarded the number one mattress picked by GQ and Wired magazine. It's even recommended by multiple leading chiropractors and doctors of sleep medicine as a go-to solution for improving your sleep. Your sleepy time pal Helix is offering up to 30% off all mattress orders and two free pillows for our listeners.
That's a lot, and it's already not that expensive a mattress. Go to helixsleep.com/Paula.
That's helixsleep.com/Paula.
This is their best offer yet. It's fantastic. It won't last long.
With Helix, better sleep starts now. Well, not right now.
And if you're going to get it anyway,
use our code.
Hey, Paula. You know, every once in a while, we get a new advertiser that I get super excited about. And I have to say, just because of the circumstances of my life, right now, I'm really excited about our new advertiser, Quince, of Quince.com, the clothing provider.
Not to be mistaken for Quince from Midsummer Night's Dream. And let me just say this, and maybe it's not important to an advertisement, but when I was in the fourth grade, our class put on a production of A Midsummer Night's Dream.
Okay.
And I played Peter Quince. There's the connection.
One of the mechanicals. That's a great connection. Also, yes, has nothing to do with this, which is that Quince is an online clothing store. And as you know, Paula, I've lost a little weight lately.
Oh, right.
75 pounds. Yeah. So I literally have no clothes that are in my size until I just ordered some stuff at Quince. And I figured, like, here's a chance for me to create a new look for myself. A whole new image.
And how's it going?
Not bad. I mean, the clothes are fantastic. I know that you ordered some too. What I got is the Comfort Stretch Traveler 5-pocket pants. And I got I got the 100% European linen shirt, and it looks breezy and it fits beautifully. And these are like premium pieces of clothing that are selling for like, you know, $30 a piece or starting at $30 at quince.com. It's awesome. I look good.
I ordered the brushed lounge jogger.
Ooh.
And, you know, I put them on when I came back from New York. I pulled them on and I swear to you, okay, this is not scientific because I was tired already.
Right.
But they were so soft and so comfortable that honestly, like right as I got them up to my waist, I think my eyes closed. They're so, it's a softness. It's a kind of softness that I don't think I've ever experienced in a garment, honestly.
You know, my drawstring European linen trousers are a little bit like that, too. Like, so comfortable that I just want to hang out with myself.
Sure. Yeah. And they're European. Keep that in mind.
European. They are so European. And you can get those kinds. You can get washable silk tops. You can get 14-karat gold jewelry and, like, all these accessories.
Quince sells a lineup of timeless pieces that keep their customers looking effortlessly chic year after year. I'm not certain that I look chic, but certainly if I did, it's not going to take a lot of effort.
I now look chic and I feel pretty great. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabric. It's all good as far as I can see.
Is it my imagination or do they cut out the middleman?
They cut out the middleman, Paula Poundstone.
I love it when they cut out the middleman. That's the thing. They cut out the middleman. That's fantastic.
So be like me and Paula. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/nobody for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's Quince.com/nobody to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/nobody. And honestly, I look fantastic. Paula, you won't be able to keep your hands off me.
Oh, I can't wait. And don't think that if you had to return something, don't think you're sending it to a middleman because they cut out the middleman.
They cut out the middleman. That's quince.com/nobody. And if you're going to do it anyway,
use our code.
A detective came and knocked on the door. And I said, "Is it Renee?" And he just gave me that solemn look.
It was the worst day ever.
The Proof Podcast is back with a new case and a new season. 23 years ago, 18-year-old Renee Ramos went missing. Her body was later found in an empty Home Depot building on the edge of town.
I don't think that they arrested the right people. It's about time somebody's trying to do something.
She had a black eye about 2 weeks before she was murdered.
They are involved. They definitely had her body and her backpack.
You know people are going to judge you, right?
Of course. They're judging me now. They've been judging me damn near my whole life.
You can listen now to season 2 of Proof wherever you get your podcasts. And follow along with us as we reinvestigate the murder at the warehouse.
I have to ask, did you kill Renee?
So you know what? I was on the CNN website last night. I know that
brilliant segue.
That goes without saying. Thank you. Thank you, Adam. And there was a headline on the CNN website that said Amy Schumer shares her baby's name. I don't think you could call any recent day a slow news day, but that is a slow news story. Amy Schumer shares her baby's name.
And of course, clickbait because they could say the name in the headline, but they won't because they want you to click.
Oh, because you're going to click. Oh, really? Yeah. I was supposed to click on that?
Oh, yeah. You know,
I thought, you know what?
And that's
someday
a reputable way to do it. Like some of the headlines would be like, you won't believe that Amy Schumer chose to name her baby this.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. I've never clicked on any of those.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I figure someday she's going to say the name aloud when communicating with the child.
That's true.
Someone will hear it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, what's the idea of her going, get over here?
So you didn't actually
David.
So you didn't actually find out what the baby's name is?
No, I didn't find out. I didn't care what the... My point is that... Who cares? That point...
That's the point we're building to?
That's the point is, who cares? And it got me wondering, like, you know,
okay,
there had to have been days in history, for example. You know how they have those calendars that are on this day in history?
Certainly.
Okay. There must be, like, you know, on this day in, you know, there must have been some unremarkable days in history. That's
unremarkable
what I'm
days
say
in history.
On this day in unremarkable history, FDR said, sorry, Eleanor, I feel like there's something stuck in the back of my throat. That would be like an unremarkable
It sure
day
would be. That
would
be super unremarkable.
On this day in unremarkable history, Ben Franklin said, Babette, look at this.
That could have been unremarkable,
yeah,
depending on what the object he was saying to look at.
Well, he used to go to France a lot. You know, he had
oh, he could have picked up a disease there or something.
He had affairs with French women.
So that look at this could have been a sore, is what you're saying?
Possibly.
Okay.
He died of syphilis, I believe.
Did he?
Yeah. Although he said he didn't have affairs with those French women. He said that they exchanged letters.
Wow.
But that was back when you had to lick the envelopes.
Okay. I don't get that at all.
It's a sexually transmitted
disease. Oh, you can get a sexually transmitted disease if you lick the envelope that somebody else licked?
It would have to be something like that if Ben Franklin were telling...
Do you customarily lick a letter when you receive it?
Well, no, he must have done it before he sent it.
Okay.
Maybe he was a reuse guy. He was like
So he licked it.
Dear Babette, I received your letter.
And now I'm licking it.
I'm enclosing mine in the same envelope.
I regummed the tab.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Babette, look at this.
You
that
know,
would be an unremarkable
I say,
day
I'm
in history.
I'm pretty sure they didn't have lickable envelopes back then.
No, what'd they
I think
do?
That's why they had those
the wax
seals. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. There well, goes that historical theory.
Well, then.
Professor Poundstone, we're going to need another explanation.
There's no question about it. He fucked those women. Jesus, Ben, I went to the wall for you. I did everything I could. I was your goddamn Bill Barr.
You really would. You really were.
I don't know if you heard, but Bill Barr may be impeached. And
yes, the
Attorney
General of the Attorney
General may be Mickey Mouse. The president's a swell guy.
Which would put him like
President
ninth in the
Trump
line.
Didn't do anything wrong. It's called presidential harassment. That's what Trump always says.
Yeah,
it's called presidential harassment. By who is it called that? Or is it whom?
It's by him.
By him. By him it's called that.
Yes, by him it's called that.
Presidential
harassment.
We've
learned so much on this show.
Yeah, it's a very educational show. You know, one of my goals during the making of this podcast.
Another great segue.
Not only do I want to engage and entertain an audience in such a way as to build connection and reinforce our humanity through laughter and the weekly consumption of a vast mountain of junk food. Not only do I want to do that.
No.
but I also want to improve my vocabulary.
Yes, we've been doing this. Yeah. We've had a new word every week. And by gum, soon I'm going to quiz you on those words.
I got to see
whether you've retained them all.
Retain them? I use them over and over again.
Not really.
I do. The word for this week is stultify.
Stultify. Oh, that's a good word.
It's a verb that means to make ineffectual or futile or worthless. Or the second meaning is to cause to appear foolish, dull-witted, or illogical.
Huh.
Here, I'll use it in a sentence.
Okay.
When Adam is unable to understand the effectiveness of my simple sample dialogue, he attempts to stultify it. Or Attorney General Bill Barr was stultified by Senator Kamala Harris's search for the truth.
You feel like I stultify? That means I attempt to make it appear foolish, dull-witted, or illogical.
My simple sample dialogue? Oh, repeatedly.
All the time.
And by the way...
No, I'm agreeing with you. I do.
Yeah, you do.
But I don't feel like I have to.
Have our numbers been growing? Have the amount of listeners that we have been growing?
They have been.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know that...
Captain Crinkle is nodding.
Yeah, they've been growing. I know that our membership is down slightly.
By 9, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, those 9 people never existed.
1, 2, 3. That's all they have. They got 3 members.
A multiple of 3, Mickey. You should have gotten that right.
Yeah. 9, 9, 9.
Our numbers are going. Now he's Herman Cain?
Yeah. It's going to be the head of the Fed. 9, 9, 9.
You know, he's picking up a little bit of a Southern accent in your hands.
Well, no, I made him a little. I made him a Herman Cain Mickey Mouse.
Oh, I see.
9, 9, 9.
Wow, you are a master. You are as good at voices as you are at balloon animals, Paula.
Well, that reminds me.
No, I shouldn't have. Oh, what's the matter with me? While Paula does this, coming up, Paula's got 14 cats and 2 dogs, but can she make it as a zookeeper? We'll find out from Professor Gary Wilson on this week's Career Corner when we return on Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone. And just like that, we're back. Whew.
You know what Moses said on this unremarkable day in history?
What did Moses say on this unremarkable? I'm loving this segment, by the way. I love it that it carries over between segments of the show.
Oi, the tablets.
Oh, they were heavy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oi, the tablets.
Oi, these tablets.
That's what he said on this unremarkable. Yeah.
I would actually call that remarkable.
Really?
Yeah, because, you know, sure, he had to march down a mountain.
You don't think he was a big complainer
tablets.
Before that?
Probably not.
Yeah.
He wasn't.
Oi.
But,
thou
you know,
shalt not complain.
But he was,
oi, cross that off.
I mean, he was given these stone tablets at the top of a mountain and told to bring them down. And this is God we're talking about. He could have said, like, pick them up at the base camp.
But yeah, exactly. Yeah, God could have said, you know what? I'll bring them for you.
Yeah, I'll put them down there. You can pick them up right before you get to. No.
Yeah. All you need is ID. You pick them up. Oi, the tablets. Yeah, that was.
That's unremarkable, I guess.
On this unremarkable day in history.
So, Paula. I don't want to stultify our listeners by stalling or anything, so...
Thank you.
How's it going out on the road there, Paula Poundstone?
You know, Adam, I love my job.
It is the greatest
job in the world. I consider myself a proud member of the endorphin production industry. The only part of my job that I loathe is the self-promotion.
Don't like self-promotion.
I hate, you know, having to tweet or do radio interviews where I go, next week, I'm going to be at the blah, 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 and the blah, blah, blah. I hate that.
Right.
Yeah. I just hate that.
It's the thing that makes you wonder whether you should be doing something else.
Every now and then I think, you know, I wonder if I could do another job.
Yeah.
Maybe. I wonder, do I have the skills to be a zookeeper?
Well, Paula Poundstone, to answer that question, welcome to Career Corner. That's a credible hi-ho there, Omar. Yes, it's time for Career Corner, where we learn about the wide world of jobs. Would you like to be a fireman? How about an astronaut? Maybe you'd like to make a living as a spot welder. What can you do with your life? Career Corner has the answer. This week, let's explore an exciting career as a zookeeper.
Beautiful.
Omar Leyva. Thank you for making my night. All right, here to help Paula discover if she could cut it in the stressful, high-stakes world of zookeeping is Gary Wilson. Now, let me tell you this. Gary Wilson is the senior professor in the Exotic Animal Training and Management Program at Moorpark College. Gary has worked as a contractor to the U.S. Navy, training dolphins, sea lions, and belugas. We're going to get into that in a second, Gary. and at the Santa Barbara Zoological Gardens as the relief zookeeper. And he has had the opportunity to work with a wide range of animals, including monkeys, camels, big cats, large reptiles, and birds of prey. So let's have a big career corner welcome for Gary!
Thank you so much for being here.
Welcome, Gary.
Thank you for asking me to be here. Zoos are always looking for good zookeepers.
Oh, is that true?
Excellent. So there's an opening.
All right. Well, we're going to find out in this career corner whether or not I could cut it as a zookeeper.
And the way to find out, I think, is to ask the obvious question. Gary, what do zookeepers do?
Well, a lot of people think that the main part of the job, of course, is just scooping poop, but there's a lot more to it than that.
Okay. Uh-oh. I'm already in trouble.
Yeah. Well, you're good at the scooping of poop.
Right, but the idea that there's a lot more to it.
Okay,
that's where I may be in the weeds.
That's a problem.
See, the zoo is responsible for the well-being of these animals, both the physical well-being and the psychological well-being of the animals in their care.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So, you have to be really observant. You have to be able to look at the animal. You have to know what's normal behavior. Mm-hmm. And recognize when there's something off about the animal. And these are non-domestic animals. You know, our dogs and cats, we've bred them to be companions, mm-hmm. and they communicate with us. They let us know when something's wrong, right?
Your puppy, centuries of breeding. That's right. The ones that communicate lived. Yeah.
Yeah.
But an animal out in nature, if it shows weakness, it shows that there's a problem, it's going to get eaten.
Right.
Oh,
yeah.
So they have to hide their feelings.
Oh my gosh.
Thus, you have to define what those feelings are.
That's right. And you're the eyes and ears for the veterinarian. The veterinarian's, of course, responsible for the health of the animals, but you're the eyes and ears there. You're seeing the animal every day. So you have to be able to recognize that there's a problem and then communicate that in a way that the veterinarian's going to understand and be able to determine, well, is this something to worry about or can we wait a while?
Interesting. You know, until you brought it up, I had not realized that so many creatures in the animal kingdom are so emotionally repressed.
But yeah, really.
They just don't know how to let it out.
It sounds like men just before they step out on their...
On their pregnant wives.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Go off to get a pack of cigarettes and never come back.
Because they weren't...
And that's every animal.
Yeah, and they were unable to recognize those symptoms. Have you in the past recognized the symptom of an animal that was psychologically ailing?
Yeah, well, you look at it, you see an animal that has its normal behavior is, it recognizes you, and it shows that by its normal... behavior, his vocalizations, and then, you know, one day it doesn't quite.
Maybe and that's how you know it's an imposter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So normally it would go, Gary, Gary! Yeah. And then one day you go in and it goes, Dave? And that's how you know.
Now, if you were hiring a zookeeper, which in fact it sounds like you are, what kind of qualities would you be looking for? And I'm guessing the Mickey Mouse voice is not one of them.
Yeah.
So, I have some sample questions, for example, that here's one that I think you might do okay with.
Well, you're getting a job interview here, Paula.
Oh, good.
You're also going to interact with the public, and maybe there's something that they're doing they shouldn't be. So say you work at the zoo, and you see a patron feeding an animal. What do you do?
What are you supposed to be asking?
Sorry.
Yeah.
We
just had a job interview expert teach you how to do job interviews.
Okay, good.
And now, a mere 2 or 3 weeks later, you get your chance.
Okay.
To show what you've learned.
I would say, excuse me, you're not feeding that jaguar, are you?
Okay.
Because I don't want to accuse them. What if they're not? I'd say, you know, that's not healthy food for the jaguar.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'd educate them. I would stop them, and then I would educate them.
So you want to teach them about the fact that zoo animals have a special diet.
Yeah.
There's, you know, you've heard of dog chow, but there's monkey
chow.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
There's special.
Well, let's role play that. Paula, let's pretend I'm feeding a jaguar. Okay. Come on up to me and come at me.
Yeah. Excuse me, sir?
Yeah.
You're not feeding that jaguar that hot dog, are you?
I sure the hell am.
Yeah, well, sir, jaguars don't eat hot dogs. It's not good for...
I boiled this one up special for him. Look, he loves it. Yeah. I've been doing this on the sly every day for 10 years. I haven't killed him yet.
Security!
Now, how'd that go? How'd she do?
Yeah, well, yeah, that could happen, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so, all right. So I would want to educate the patron why you don't want to do that.
Now,
Another thing you need to know is about animal training.
Yeah.
So a lot of people
Why would you train an animal in a zoo?
So people have an idea that, okay, the animal's confined in the zoo,
mm-hmm.
and we're going to do whatever we need to keep it well and so mm-hmm. forth. But we actually can get the animal to participate in its own care. For example, if the veterinarian has to come and either restrain the animal to give it a shot or mm-hmm. or to do an examination, that's stressful.
Yeah.
So we absolutely. Want to avoid that if we can. So yeah. what we've been doing for...
Don't use stirrups.
For,
wow.
Yeah. yeah. That's one of the worst parts of any examination is the stirrups.
I'm amazed that we went there so quickly. We were one sentence into this.
Yeah, it's yeah. almost impossible to get an ostrich in into syrup? The stirrups.
Because they're so far apart.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so, sorry. Okay.
Pretend you didn't hear that. Let's yeah. continue.
Sorry.
So
you just stultified him.
I didn't mean to stultify your explanation.
We train the animals to cooperate. We uh-huh. teach them through...
To put the gown on? Do you have to put the gown on?
Usually no.
You teach yeah. them to emotionally deal with an examination, right?
We might train them to allow us to clip some hair off of them, actually just shave a spot. So
how
that
do
we
you
can
train, like what kind of animal might you be talking about?
We've done it with a tiger, for example.
You've trained a tiger uh-huh. to allow you to shave a spot of its hair? Is it like when you go to a hairdresser, do you show it magazines? Like with other tigers? Like,
shave tiger today.
That? Do you want this mohawk?
No, not quite.
That sounds like a really dangerous training process.
Yeah. How do you train the tiger to allow you to shave its hair?
A lot of good men and women died training that tiger to like a shave.
Yeah, really. Yeah. So. I'll bet you the tigers, if we could only understand what they say to each other, they're like, there's a guy who came here last night. He thinks he's training me. To let him shave my hair. On day four, I'm going to eat that fucker.
All right, I'm going to do something uncharacteristic on our podcast, and I'm going to ask that the guest answer the question.
Okay.
Which is, how do you train a tiger to accept a
guess that
a,
doesn't
a shave.
Give me a lot to do so, right now.
Well, that's 30 seconds, Paula.
Well, Paul is on to something in that we do have to
thank
communicate.
You, Gary.
We do need to communicate to the animal.
Absolutely.
We
got to communicate.
And we use that. What we do is we use positive reinforcement. Uh-huh. We use operant conditioning. And that's a language that
operant
the animal...
Operant conditioning.
Operant
what does that
conditioning.
Mean?
It means that the animal's behavior can result in reinforcement.
Mm-hmm.
The animal, things that lead to good things, the animals want food, mm-hmm. Scratch on the ear, whatever, it'll do those things more often. Or it'll
they mostly
do it
just
again.
Want food and sex. Isn't that correct?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, so you just do this thing like... Okay, Tiger, if you let us shave us, we're going to stop playing Nickelback.
No. So that would be what we call negative reinforcement.
Oh, okay, right, right, right.
And that's where we take an aversive thing
pretty
away.
Pretty judgmental about a very successful band, Gary. Okay.
Hey, listener, it's Zach Harper, Amin El-Hassan, and Anthony Mays of Cinephobe. You may be asking yourself, what is Cinephobe? Amin, would you like to fill in the people?
Cinephobe is the podcast where Zach and I watch movies that are poorly rated on Rotten Tomatoes and try to ascertain...
All we're trying to ascertain?
Yes.
Okay. Ascertain.
Whether or not they're accurately poorly rated, or maybe they didn't get a fair shake. Cinephobe, produced by this guy, Anthony Mays.
Hey, that's me. I produced this show. I also watch the movies, even though that wasn't included in the description, and I also ascertain. This month is... Whoa! Oh, Maze, why'd you say that? Supercharge it. So that this promo can remain evergreen.
I feel like explaining a little bit more.
In 60 seconds?
I don't know. Maybe I don't bring attention to it. Assuring people like, look, if you listen, you're going to get it. Just give it time.
That's a good promo. Just listen to it.
Give it time.
You'll figure it out.
Is this the promo right now?
Isn't it?
Okay, I think we got it.
Cinephobe.
Wherever you get podcasts.
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. The Daily Show podcast has everything you need to stay on top of today's news and pop culture. You get hilarious, satirical takes on entertainment, politics, sports, and more from Jon and the team of correspondents and contributors. The podcast also has content you can't get anywhere else, like extended interviews and a roundup of the weekly headlines. Listen to The Daily Show, Ears Edition, wherever you get your podcasts.
The spread of misinformation has fueled our cultural divide and increased our collective anxiety about the future. Tackling misinformation isn't a simple task, but it's important. And that's why I'm so excited to tell you about Conspirituality, a podcast that's dismantling New Age cults, wellness grifters, and conspiracy mad yogis.
On the show, a journalist, a cult researcher, and a philosophical skeptic walk into a bar, and the bartender says, no, it's not that old joke. They dive deep into current events, such as RFK Jr.'s involvement in mainstreaming dangerous anti-vax rhetoric. They crowdsource, research, analyze, and dream up answers to the problem with, get this, proven science as their ultimate guiding light.
I highly recommend you check out Conspirituality's fascinating episodes on creating comedy in the MAGAverse with Jordan Klepper or RFK Jr. flirting with body fascism.
And you've listened to a bunch of them at this point, Paul, I know, and you tell me you love it.
I do. They're fascinating, and my favorite part is they use, wait for it, proven science.
And
if there's any kids listening, that's a class we used to take. Proven yep. science as their ultimate guiding light. I love that.
From exploring cults to analyzing our cultural and political landscape, the Conspirituality podcast will help you stay informed about misinformation and help you resist fear tactics. Find Conspirituality on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, I was going off the way you said
you're absolutely right.
So, all right. So you give them reinforcement.
So first, we start with some basic things like just come over here and I'll give you a piece of food. And so then the cat learns, okay, it's worth coming to that person. And because
here,
food's going to
food.
Be available. And then
on the third time, you take out the clippers.
No, we take.
Do you ever show them you doing your own hair?
Well, no. I think the thing to do would be to have somebody get in a tiger suit and get fed
That's
a lot
a good
for being
idea.
Trained.
Right?
Yeah. See?
Yeah.
We could totally throw Gary out of business with our
get
habits.
In a tiger suit with one patch of fur missing.
Yeah.
And just be eating gummy bears.
Tigers don't learn so well by copying behavior. Monkeys,
oh, they don't?
Monkeys will do that.
All right. So first you tell the tiger, you know, come here and I'll give you some food.
So it starts associating the keeper with the food.
Right.
And then,
I imagine they associate keepers with food to begin with, don't
they?
Well,
yeah, but let him get here.
All right. And then by how you present the food, you can get the tiger to get into a corner of the enclosure so that its nose is in one spot and its tail's in another spot. And then you can reach in and pull the tail through an opening. And you do small approximations, meaning that first we just touch the tail and reward the tiger with some food for allowing that.
Yeah.
And then manipulating
the
tail.
Is a setup.
And then
go ahead, touch my fucking tail. Go ahead.
And then
you're slowly acclimating the tiger to the idea that when it gets fed in that special corner
and
of the cage.
We're teaching that it's worthwhile. It's worthwhile to do this because you're getting food. So we just keep doing more and more, and we bring clippers that he might be afraid of, and we turn on the clippers, and at a distance, we hold them away, and then we bring them closer and closer, and we reward the cat.
How long does this take?
Well, it can take months.
Yeah.
It can take months, but we want to take our time because we have to, this is the language that we have to communicate with the animal, so we've got to teach it that we always want the animal to be successful.
Right.
So all these steps, it's learning, oh, I can do this. This isn't hard. I can do this. I get food for doing this. This is cool.
Yeah.
And eventually we shave a little bit of the tail and the cat accepts that. And then we start pressing like just our fingernail to it to simulate a needle. And we can eventually get to where we're actually sticking a needle in and pulling blood and getting a blood sample from the cat. So we don't have to knock it down with an anesthetic. We don't have to restrain it. And the cat. Now,
does this work all the time or have you been maimed?
Well, not in doing this kind of process.
Right. Okay.
But have you
had some negative animal encounters that you want to share with us?
I've had a few, but the listeners
don't know this, but Gary has an enormous scar across his.
We were told not to mention
right
the scar.
Right from
the
top
of his forehead.
Left hand side of his forehead, across his nose, all the way down his neck. And that was from, what did you tell me, a camel?
Well,
a camel with a knife.
Yeah.
There's no way a camel in the wild could do that.
It was there's a camel who slips some money to the tiger.
Well, yeah. Actually,
yeah. Act like you're going to let him touch your tail.
I had a female camel lay on me one time. Yeah.
Oh. She was you had not, a female camel was, lay on you
yeah,
one
she was,
time?
She was not
we
happy.
Hadn't even expected to get to this in the interview.
No. Well, we didn't expect to get past the second question.
Send your camel to bed.
Okay. Now, Gary, I feel like we've buried the lead here a little bit because we're about to do something really special on this show tonight. Now, you know, not only are we all familiar with the zookeeper appearing on the late night television show.
Yeah.
But you've actually participated in that kind of stuff, right? You assisted yeah. Jack Hanna, did you?
Yeah. I've,
on
I
the Tonight
know Jack.
Show.
Yeah.
Well, so tonight we're going to attempt something that people said was a stupid thing to do on an audio broadcast. It was, I understand you brought some animals with
I
you.
I did.
You did.
And yeah, I did wrestle with that because they don't necessarily
get fucking
make
camel out of here. Oh my God.
These animals don't make a lot
you.
Of noise.
I can tell it recognizes you.
No, we don't care that they don't make a lot of noise. Well, Paula will pretend to be them anyway, and it will sound like Mickey Mouse.
Paula, I need you to put these gloves on.
I'm putting on these.
We're going to take some pictures and put them on our
gloves,
Facebook page and our websites and stuff.
Oh,
people will be
God.
Able to see this exciting audio. the visual component.
All right, so I've got gloves on. I've got a pair of suede leather gloves on.
Yes, you do. And Gary is opening up a thing.
He's opening up a
kennel here. Yeah.
Well, it's a plastic bin.
Yeah, it's a. He's calling it a kennel, but it's the kind of thing you might bring a sizable cake to a picnic in.
This is a Egyptian spiny-tailed lizard, or a.
A spiny-tailed lizard? Now I want to come over there and see that, but I'm the only one on the microphone at this moment. So go ahead, now, Paul, go enjoy. I'll report what's going on.
It's an Egyptian spiny-tailed lizard.
Stupidest idea ever.
Here's another thing you have to. Paula, as a zookeeper, you have to learn scientific names of these things.
Yeah, okay. Egyptian spiny-tailed lizard.
Well, that's a common name.
The Latin name is what you need.
Oh. Right. It's Euromastix aegyptia.
Euromastix aegyptia.
Yep, that's it. Very good.
Well, I knew that.
Sounds like Europe and
when
Egypt
when you called it a spiny-tailed whatever, I thought,
well, that's
what's
a colloquial
he saying?
Name. Okay, so you're going to lift this lizard so I can see it. Oh, my God.
Wow.
So it's a monstrous little lizard.
Well, this
and
guy
its tail,
is...
Gary, correct me if I'm wrong, that tail looks spiny.
It is spiny.
It's a spiny-tailed lizard.
And this guy is a young one. He's he's about 5 years old. His name's Larry.
Larry.
It's
funny
because
Paula's puppy is named Mo.
I almost named the pod puppy Mo. I almost named it Larry. It would have been so confusing had I.
So
when you handle an animal, this would be a situation where you might bring an animal out and let the public get close to it.
Yeah.
Right.
This kind of interaction, getting to see a live animal, is really important for people to develop an appreciation for these animals.
I'm appreciating Larry right now.
Yeah, this is an animal that's only found in Africa and Arabia. And lives in really hot areas.
And Miranda Street.
And so, Miranda Street. So,
did you name him that so you can take him to bars?
Actually,
and go like, I'm Gary and this is Larry.
Yeah.
No, I didn't.
Larry
was found inside one of the mattresses on Miranda Street.
All right.
So it's important that you support his weight. So use both hands to hold him up, and then just keep your thumbs over him. So that'll discourage him from running off of your hands. You don't want to drop
him.
Can
you do that, Paula?
Okay, and when I hold him, you shave his tail.
It doesn't have hair.
What would you do if he ran?
Well, where would he go?
Okay.
As we said, we're on Miranda Street.
You
could get some medical marijuana if you wanted.
Obviously, this is audio, but I want you to know, Larry has the angriest look on his face right now.
He really does.
I'm able to communicate. What he's saying right now is, get your fucking thumb off my back.
See, I thought what he was thinking was, wow, my uncle got the Tonight Show. And I get this. I get a podcast in North Hollywood.
So Larry does look mad, doesn't he, Gary?
Yeah, no.
Are you able
to
read that expression?
No, he looks like that all the time.
Does he look like that all the time?
Yeah, he does.
Oh, it's just another day for Gary. Larry.
So,
are you going to feed him?
I'm going to offer him a dandelion flower here. Let's see if he.
Oh, let's feed him.
Larry, do you want a dandelion?
Oh, listeners, I assure you, this is much more exciting for us than it is for you. Look at that! He's eating the dandelion, ladies and gentlemen. He's eating. No, now that I'm yelling, he's not eating anymore. Oh, now he's eating it again.
No, he's lunging for Three Musketeers. Yeah. He's dropped the dandelion. He's gone for the original.
Now,
Butterfinger.
A common question that would be asked in an interview where you're trying for a job, where you're going to be sharing animals with the public would be you might be given an object and say and told, okay, just talk for 2 minutes on this object. Tell us about this lizard.
Larry, the African spiny-tailed lizard.
Not even close.
Excuse me, sir?
Egyptian.
Egyptian.
So it's close.
Yeah. Well, it is close.
Yeah.
Egyptian spiny-tailed lizard. Sorry, I was thinking of the other kind. Yeah. Larry appears to have fairly powerful jaws. He looks like he's a little bit on the jowly side. Right. He has a head not unlike a bearded dragon lizard without the beard.
We know that it's because Gary shaved the guy.
He has a wrinkly torso.
Oh, now we're getting personal insults.
And a long, well, not surprisingly, spiny tail. he's got two little holes for his nose, and if it's not my imagination, he's had some work done on his eyes.
Has Larry had some work done on his eyes?
No, he hasn't.
Not okay, well, then it is my imagination. Yeah. Maybe he had it before he came to Gary.
So, how's Paula doing?
She's doing great.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm a zoo guest.
Why
is his tail spiny?
To beat the shit out of enemies.
Mommy, she said shit.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Well, little fella, let's head over to the gorilla cage. I believe you'll be saying it any minute now. I think one of the ways he fights off his enemies.
Predators.
Is by whacking them with his spiny tail.
Is this true?
That's true.
I could see where Larry might be on the fast side because these legs, I mean, he has very distinct knees. And it looks like those legs are pretty powerful and he could really hustle if he had to.
Yep.
Or if he thought he had to.
They actually have, so the fact that he's not inflated actually is a good sign.
What would he look like if he was inflated?
So what they'll do
I'm going to make a balloon animal that looks just like Larry.
He comes to resemble Paula's right boob.
They'll actually, if they're threatened, they'll run in between the crevices and rocks, and then they'll suck in air and expand their body.
Expands his body so that you can't get it out from in between the rocks?
That's right. All that you can see is that spiny tail that's waving around.
He would inflate and then continue to whack with his tail.
That's right.
That's smart, Larry.
And it was insightful that you mentioned bearded dragon because they're actually in the same family.
Are they? Yeah, really? We had a bearded dragon named Daisy.
Okay.
Turned out to be a male. and Larry does look a little bit like Daisy.
All right. Well, this is made for some great audio.
The same look of love.
Let's retire Larry for now because I understand you have another bigger and just as exciting animal.
All right,
and you'll know that Gary doesn't even bother with the gloves.
No, Gary just
manhandles that. He lizard handles that.
Gary put Larry's head in his mouth.
Yeah.
Gary just put the lizard's head in his mouth and then swung it into the bin. Gary's amazing.
Now you have another animal here.
This is a mammal.
It's a mammal.
So, Paula, since it's a mammal, what do you expect it to have that Larry doesn't have?
A little fur.
Yeah.
Got a little fur. Going to be breathing the oxygen. Not eating its young, of course.
I'm pretty sure the lizards breathe oxygen as well.
And by the way, mammal, then it must have a podcast, because we all do.
All right, so this is going to be pretty interesting. Now, if you're listening at home, what you're missing right now is absolutely nothing because
no, that's not true.
Gary's putting on some gloves.
Gary is suiting up right now. He's putting on the compression gloves. He's getting a lot of circulation.
All right, and here it comes. It's a dear God. It's a tribble. It's a tribble. It looks exactly like a tribble. Does it have a face somewhere?
It does. It's under there.
Oh my God. Tell us about this little creature.
This is a four-toed hedgehog.
It's a four-toed hedgehog.
Or African pygmy hedgehog.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Look at that. Here comes his face. Oh, who's got a little hedgehog face?
That is the cutest little hedgehog face.
You do.
And he's got four toes. You know what that means? He may work eventually at Maximum Fun.
Oh, Maximum Fun.
As the accountant.
I see.
Look they at got that. Four members.
Now, I'm assuming that means four toes on each limb.
Actually, on
total
his hind,
16.
On his hind feet, and he actually has five toes on the front feet. So.
What? So he's got 18
yeah.
toes?
Yeah, 18 toes. So I'm wearing gloves because he has spines.
Oh, those are spines?
Yeah.
Because they look so fuzzy. I mean, he does, if you're a fan of the old Star Trek, he looks exactly like a Tribble.
Yep.
Like an adorable, faceless powder puff.
But they're not soft. They're pokey.
They're pokey.
Yeah.
You want to hold them,
yeah.
Paul? Okay.
Yeah.
So,
I want Paul to hold them too, but I do not want it. And so what's this one's name?
Cup your hands. This is Needles.
His name is Needles.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a little on the nose, don't you think, Gary?
Well, his companion is Pins.
And his companion is Pins.
My
again.
Gosh.
Oh, yeah.
Well, he's tucking his little nose into my
into
glove.
The crook of your hand. Yeah.
Yeah. As if he doesn't really want to look at me.
Well.
Ah! Did you just bite me, Gary?
I don't think so.
I think so, Gary.
Gary doesn't think he bit you.
I don't think he can bite you through those gloves.
Now, is that
well,
something
he didn't get to me, but okay, I think he was trying.
How all often does a zookeeper falsely accuse an animal of biting them?
No, he definitely made a biting motion.
I don't know.
I don't think he made it through the gloves.
You can, yeah, you can touch it. Just be careful. They are sharp.
Ooh, they are.
Now, how old is Needles?
Needles is.
Let me think. You're off microphone, so I'm just going to repeat everything you say, Gary.
Needles is.
Two years old.
He's holding up his paw. He says four.
Well, that's how many toes he's got, Paula. Wow.
You think he was trying to bite me? Or he was just moving his nose?
Well, maybe he doesn't want to be held by you now that you've falsely accused him, Paula.
Now, when they are frightened by something,
what do they do?
They do a behavior called popcorning, mm-hmm. where they. So they have a band of muscle.
Okay.
Around their middle,
okay.
and it pulls tight like a drawstring. It pulls their skin down around their belly and their legs, uh-huh. and it makes
like
those,
a compression sock.
Like a compression
Gary,
sock.
Gary,
and
look
it,
at
makes
this.
All the, it makes
that's
all the.
That's definitely spines. Biting my glove. All right, do you see that? Do you see those teeth marks on that glove, Gary?
Yeah, Gary, take them back. Needles has gone bad.
Tony. If you could just
that.
Photograph that.
I guess Paula wasn't
this animal that Gary insists doesn't bite. Just
Gary,
right
you're
through
like
the...
you're like half the parents I know in my kids' kindergarten class. Oh no, she plays nice all the time. She would never hit.
Yeah, no,
would.
That went right. That is right through like, the goddamn glove, Gary.
You know there is a
Gary. What's up with that?
I've worked with a lot of veterinarians, and they say the you have to be careful when you ask the owner. Does your dog bite?
Right.
Because they always say, no, it doesn't bite. And what they mean is, it doesn't bite me.
Right, right. Yeah.
But I
exactly.
think that's what just happened here, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, yeah. No, I would right. say that Needles has become Jaws.
Yeah. It's very impressive. Well, on that note, I'm just going to say thank you, Gary, for taking us on the Safari of Knowledge.
This was spectacular.
Now, Paula, as you gaze into Needles' feral, violent eyes,
yeah.
What have you learned about being a zookeeper, and could you do that job?
All right, so I think I know what I need to know to be a zookeeper. Omar, could I have some background zookeeper music? In order to be a zookeeper, you have to be able to hold an animal and talk about it to the public for 2 minutes or so. The four-toed hedgehog, ladies and gentlemen, is an insect eater. They don't eat meat. In order to be a zookeeper, you have to be observant. So the four-toed hedgehog is an insect eater. Is that blood dripping down my arm? Zookeepers have to notice if the animal has a change of behavior. So the gentle four-toed hedgehog is burrowing its head into the opening it has created in the muscular pad of my thumb. You have to be able to tell the zoo visitors not to feed the animals. Sir, please don't feed the four-toed hedgehog. They have a very special diet. Bugs and the meat from my hand.
So, Paula, where are you going to be appearing next?
On June 7th, Adam. I'm going to be in St. Paul, Minnesota at the Fitzgerald Theater. And on June 21st, you can find me in Medford, Massachusetts at the Chevalier Theater. You can find all my tour dates at paulapoundstone.com.
Yes, you can. Gary Wilson is the senior professor in the Exotic Animal Training and Management Program at Moore Park College, Moore Park, California. Thank you so much for being on our show, Gary.
Thanks,
it was
Gary.
A pleasure.
That was fantastic.
Absolutely great.
Thank you.
I'm just going to put some antibacterial salve.
You do that, and we'll see about getting you a prosthesis there.
Don't call us, Paula. We'll call you.
When we come back, where in the world is Thomas Coyne?
The cat of the week is Tucker from Rhinebeck, New York.
Thank you, Omar Leyva. You have been fantastic tonight, man.
Really great. Okay, did you see the balloon animal that I made of the hedgehog?
I did not.
Okay, do you see the four toes?
I didn't see anything other than a balloon that had been twisted once or twice.
No.
Well, where is it?
Do you see the little... careful.
The one you're making now?
Yeah, because these are sharp quills, so don't touch...
Paula, it is in fact just a balloon at this point.
No, it's not. You don't see the...
Stultify
my balloon animals.
I don't need to make your balloon animals look stupid.
Do you see the little quills?
Yes, I see the uninflated end of the balloon.
Yeah, okay, that's a quill.
That's a quill?
Yeah.
So that doesn't qualify as quills then, does it?
Well, you know, Adam, you do have to use some imagination when you look at a balloon animal. Thank you
this
very
is
much.
Actually great.
Captain Crinkle says
this
it's good.
It could be anything, but it's
what
good.
Do you mean it could be anything? It's a four-toed.
Well, it's a shape.
It's a four-toed.
Show me the four toes.
Hedgehog.
We're doing more visual stuff for our listeners.
I'm going to show you
this
the four toes, but I'm going to do it as Mickey Mouse. One, two, three.
Once again, Mickey can't count.
Exactly. He only has three fingers.
Okay.
So, you know what? I was just in the restroom, and I want to say this. A, fabulous experience, and B,
yeah.
Thomas Coyne is not there.
Okay. Okay, now, if you're a new listener, and it's true, we make fun, but we
and
have
I'm sure
new listeners every
we
week.
We have new listeners every week. Are you
the
kidding
numbers,
me?
And we really do have new listeners every week.
And members. We have members.
Right.
Up the yin-yang.
Less so, but yes.
We have almost 10,000 listeners.
No. We have more than 10,000
oh,
listeners.
Oh, yeah, more than we have almost 10,000 members.
We booked almost 1,000 new members for maximum fun.
Right, exactly.
Is really what we're saying.
Yeah, that's okay. What I'm saying.
And we're wrong about that, too. But anyway, for those of you who might be new or need a refresher, in our third episode of this mighty, mighty podcast, we had booked a survivalist to tell us how to survive bear attacks.
Yeah.
Thomas Coyne was his name.
Uh-huh.
Runs a survival school. Never made it to the podcast. Now, he either ghosted on us or died.
We tried texting him, emailing him. We tried calling him. Tony Anita Hull had made the arrangement for him to be here with us on Miranda Street to explain to us how to survive a bear attack.
And he apparently didn't survive Miranda Street.
Right, exactly.
And this is
not a
great neighborhood.
But we don't know where he bought it. We don't know if it was on his way out of his own driveway.
Yeah. Here on Miranda Street.
We have no way of knowing.
Yeah.
But what we have been doing, fortunately, we have listeners who have been very engaged. And I want to thank everyone who's participated
in this manhunt.
Yes.
And Paula has set up this what she calls an international dragnet to find Thomas Coyne, the survivalist.
So I'm going to give you the update.
Yeah.
We haven't found him.
We have
not
yet found him.
That's the update.
I'm going to submit that one of the reasons we haven't found him is that, A, we haven't tried calling him in a long time, and B...
that's not how you find someone who's on the lam.
These search methods that you're using are not very efficient because what
that's
you're doing
not
is
true.
You're having our listeners report places where they don't see him. Like
exactly.
You just reported the bathroom over
right,
there.
Right, because I'm doing my job.
But that's not going to help because he could be in that bathroom right now.
I to borrow a phrase from Harry Potter or from the Harry Potter book, constant vigilance. A lot of our listeners have been going on the Facebook page and we have an interactive map.
Yes, we have a bunch of...
Where they say where they
have
not seen him.
Yes.
And it's been very helpful.
It hasn't, but here we
it's
go.
It's been very helpful. We're narrowing.
We're not at all, but here we go. River Honer writes, I can confirm that he is not at the Shibuya Crossing, the world's busiest pedestrian intersection in Tokyo, Japan.
See, a lot of people would have thought that because it is the world's busiest intersection that he would be there. But thank you, River.
Well, this one person thinks that even if he were at that crossing at that moment, because it is the busiest pedestrian crossing in the world.
It was the right place to look for him.
That he could have been there, and she might not have seen him.
Yeah, exactly.
Or he might not have seen him.
No, he wasn't there. Okay. He looked.
Don P. says, quote, Thomas Coyne was not at the Bijou chain-off area at the summit of Pine Pass in northern British Columbia, Canada, this morning at 7:26 a.m. That was on March 29th.
Oh, fuck. I could have sworn...
That's where
we're going to get him there and
yeah.
then?
Oh, my gosh. I'm on the edge of my seat.
I want to thank Don P. for at least acknowledging that there's a temporal component to this that Paula seems to be missing. Okay, Noah Vimosi.
Noah Vimosi. That's Mrs. Vimosi's youngest.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, the youngest of the Vimosis. I am sorry to inform you, but unfortunately, your dear survivalist was not in room 215 at the Amherst Regional High School in Amherst, Massachusetts at 1:25 p.m. today, February 15th. As Adam said on the show, this might not be the most effective way to find Mr. Coyne. Bless you, Noah.
Fuck you, Noah. Fuck you. Goddamn high school kid. That's what I think.
Well,
but you weren't in the class either, Noah. That's what I'll bet.
Oh, boy.
Does your mother know you're not going to class?
No, you really have a way of reaching out to our listeners.
Yeah. You know what, Noah?
Disagrees with you, and you're like...
No, you know what?
He's him.
If Noah went to school, he would know that this is a fine way of looking for something. On the other hand, John Odelin,
yes.
Let us know that Thomas Coyne is not in the cereal aisle of the Wegmans supermarket in Princeton, New Jersey.
Isn't that
where they correct the SATs, by the way? And he also says that Captain Crunch is the best cereal ever.
Okay, well.
Captain Crunch.
Not to be confused with Captain Crinkle.
I was going
to
say, Captain Crunch was recently at the officer's mess with Captain Crinkle.
Yes, Captain Crunch was eventually like, God damn it.
Yeah.
I mean, my cereal crunches, but you're like a symphony of noise.
Yeah. The crunching only goes on while you're eating. The crinkling goes on forever.
Yeah. okay, and don't forget, we have our interactive Thomas Coyne map on Facebook for whatever it's worth. And according to the map, here are some of the exotic places. And I'm going
to. I just want to go back to one thing.
What's
Fuck
that?
You, Noah. Fuck
I'll
you.
Leave Noah alone. He's a listener.
Goddamn high school kid.
Or he was
his parents,
a listener.
His parents were probably those rich people that got him into high school by photoshopping his face onto an athlete. He's not a teacher.
My
if he
God.
Were a teacher, he would know that this is a perfectly effective way of finding Thomas Coyne.
No, it's not. Anyway, here are some of the exotic places that Thomas Coyne was not reported on the website. I'm going to pronounce a lot of these wrong. One is Kariakou, Tanzania.
Kariakou, of course.
Okay.
Yeah.
Herdia, Costa Rica.
You got a little German there.
Yeah.
Herdia.
No, it was post-World War II. It was founded as a colony for Nazis. City of Brno in the Czech Republic.
Is Brno? B-R-N-O?
Yeah. B-R-N-O?
There's no B-E-R-B-U-R?
Brno.
Brno.
That sounds very Czech to me.
Yeah.
The retreat spot.
It sounds like you have lockjaw. That's what it sounds like. Brno.
You know, you can read
some of
these too,
step on a rusty nail eventually. Brno. He's apparently not been located at the retreat spa cabin number 4 at the Blue Lagoon Spa in Reykjavik, Iceland.
Yeah.
Yeah, boy.
Well, cabin number 3.
Yeah.
Still a hot contender, as is. Must I point out cabin number 4. He's not at the Global Center Mall in Chengdu, Sichuan, China, the largest building in the world by square footage. And this brings us back to the Shibuya pedestrian crossing fallacy. I can't go to a Yankee game at Yankee Stadium and report, oh, Thomas Coyne's not at Yankee Stadium.
Yeah, because you're not helping.
No, because it's big.
It's big. Well, you look around, Adam. You look around.
For God's sake.
I think
sakes.
That it's the
what else you got?
This
is another one. You can do the last
who
one.
Went to the Global Center Mall in Chengdu, Sichuan, China, which is the largest building in the world by square footage.
Yeah.
They went through the building and looked.
To an extent, I suppose. All right.
What do you mean?
Also,
you sound exhausted from your own little search here in the.
I'm not searching.
Yeah, you're
I'm
not
just
searching.
Not, I'm yeah. a non-com in yeah, this particular.
Yeah. You know what? Once again, you try to stultify my methods.
Once again, your methods need no additional stultification.
I'll tell you where he's not. The
okay.
Isle of Rosse Distillery in Scotland.
Ah, the Isle of Rosse.
It's R-A-A. S-A-Y.
Yeah.
Yeah, unless
yeah,
somebody
yawned
A
while
was
they were
just
naming it.
Sticking.
Yeah. And he's not in the West Virginia Penitentiary.
At this time.
Now, we got a note from Tony Anita Hall. This is a very important note.
Yeah.
No one has put a pin on anywhere in Russia. Could Thomas Coyne be there?
Oh, see? Tony Anita Hall is...
noting what countries...
No, she's really got... She's
right,
paying
we,
careful
we got China
attention.
And Japan covered
she's going to be the one to find him. It's going to be her.
You know who's going to be the one to find him?
Yeah.
He's going to find us. And he's going to kill us. My prediction. Okay. Remember, you can send your updates to Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone at gmail.com. Or you can visit us on Facebook at Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone to see our interactive map and place a pin where Thomas Coyne is not.
You know, last week we did a taste test on the potato chip brand Hawaiian Chips. The writing on the package claims that when you eat the chips, you'll feel like you're on an island or floating towards an island or covered in plastic-infested ocean water or something.
Probably not that.
We ate a bag or two of Hawaiian chips and didn't feel that we budged off of our studio in the land of discarded toilets and mattresses.
Right.
However, we did really enjoy the chips.
They make great chips.
Which is, I think, the best you can expect from a chip. I don't really expect it to make me feel like I'm traveling. Just a tasty chip is enough. In this week's Further Disappointments Department.
Oh, the legendary Further Disappointments Department.
In this week's Further Disappointments Department, we also learned that Hawaiian chips are not even remotely Hawaiian.
What?
They're made in Algona, a suburb of Seattle, and don't even include any Hawaiian ingredients. In fact, a man named Michael Maida, who bought a bag of Hawaiian chips in Honolulu, is suing the company for their misrepresentation. I guess he ate some chips.
This is true. I read about this,
too. Yeah, he ate some chips there in Honolulu and had a feeling that he was floating in a suburb of Seattle.
That's probably what did it. No, it is really disappointing. Apparently,
we have some chips here on the table, right?
Yeah, and you bought the unflavored ones today, so it's even less impressive. But
They're crispy and crunchy and gluten-free. But right on the front, there's two, like, compelling women dressed in Hawaiian garb with a volcano behind them.
What do you mean by compelling?
I think so.
Oh, I'm compelled.
I was going to see babes, but didn't seem flattering.
No, they are wasp-waisted hula girls.
Yeah.
Yes.
They have beads that can't decide which side of their breasts to be on.
Oh, so they're just over the top? I hadn't even noticed.
Well, they're parted by the nipple. The beads are parted by the nipple.
I think you're just sort of making that part up.
I'm not making that up. Look right there. Is that bead not part of
nipples?
Well, no, but that's you gotta use your imagination.
I'm not going to imagine
that. Hold on. I'm gonna make a balloon animal.
Of what?
Of these Hawaiian women.
Oh my God. No, you're not.
So anyways, so they're not even made.
They're not even made. So like, this is just some Seattle. Is it Seattle?
It's an Algona.
This is some Seattle hipster's vision of what a Hawaiian chip life might look like. It's I feel a little bit disappointed.
I feel further disappointed by this. You know what? Chalk it up to the Further Disappointments Department.
I don't know that I'd sue. I have to say that to Mr. Maida. I understand it. Like, this is law. You're not allowed to say something is made in Hawaii unless part of it is made in Hawaii.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, it turns out that's the law. And but if you look, these guys, this Washington company doesn't claim they were made in Hawaii.
No, they don't. But they represent it so.
They represent, yes, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's what Mr. Maida is suing for. I believe it's emotional distress or something.
Emotional distress.
And that seems a little far-fetched.
How tenderly balanced must he have been to begin with?
Yeah.
How teetering on the edge? How Jenga-like must he have been to begin with?
I gotta say.
That he suffered emotional distress from where his chips were made.
Yeah, I gotta say, given that the chips affected him so, you just now might have just killed him.
Oh, jeez, that's a good point. He was already.
Well, let's hope he doesn't listen.
A bit
to
of
this.
A delicate
flower.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. He was.
Yes.
He was already a. Yeah.
He's claiming he suffered injury. Actually.
Yeah. Yeah. He suffered injury. Yeah. I think it was because he was floating on a chip in the ocean, and he dangerous.
But that
was
a disappointment. And you have another entry, don't you?
And yet another feature in this week's Further Disappointment Department.
Yes.
After Adam and I wondered aloud last week about Betty Crocker.
Yes.
Captain Crinkle couldn't help Googling, probably while she was on the phone with me, to find out if she was still alive. It turns out she never was alive. Talk about your disappointment.
That's a disappointment. Betty Crocker is a croc. Now, it started in 1921 when the company that later became known as General Mills ran a contest.
It was the flour milling company called Washburn Crosby Company.
Now, we're just competing to read Tony's notes right here.
No, I happen to know that. Were you reading it from notes?
I was.
No, it was a flour milling company. Bullshit. It was the Washburn Crosby Company.
Anyway.
Now known as General Mills, sure.
Anyway, they started getting questions from customers, and they started to make the answers more personal. The Department of Five Home Economists started signing them Betty Crocker.
That's weird.
That is weird.
Why would you just from out of nowhere? Until then, you'd been whoever you were. Like, I'm Paula Poundstone, and then one day somebody asked me a question about a flour recipe, and I go, oh, from me, Betty Crocker.
Sort of like that, except it was a department. The whole department was answering. But here's where it turns interesting. She was turned into an empire by one of those home economists, Marjorie Husted. She became Betty Crocker. And by the 40s, she was a celebrity.
And Margaret Husted was. Marjorie.
Well, no, as
Marjorie
Betty
Husted.
Crocker.
Oh, but
she
not
was a
Marjorie.
Croc. No, Marjorie, was lost to history until this podcast, I guess.
Uh-huh.
No, in 1945, Fortune magazine declared her the second most popular woman in America.
That is just sad.
What?
About America. That Betty Crocker was the second most popular woman.
Yeah. The first was Eleanor Roosevelt.
Wow.
In 1945.
It's not even worth being the first most popular woman if the second is Betty Crocker.
Eleanor was devastated.
I'll betcha.
Yeah. In fact, she canceled her subscription.
Yeah.
To Fortune.
That's horrible. That's horrible. You know, on an unremarkable day in history, Eleanor was heard to say to Franklin Delano, I'm better than Betty Crocker, aren't I?
That would be an unremarkable day in history.
Yeah, it was an unremarkable day in history.
I would think she'd tell him, just drink a glass of water.
Just drink a glass of water?
That's a callback to like an hour and a half ago when you did that thing about Franklin Roosevelt choking on something.
Yeah. Eleanor, I think there's something stuck in my throat.
Just drink a glass of water.
Edith?
No, it's me, Eleanor Roosevelt. Oh, Franklin.
You're not in the closet with Betty Crocker, are you?
And I guess that about does it for the further disappointment.
So many people who thought that Betty Crocker was real, and it turns out not real at all.
Not. Well, that was fun. Thank you, Betty Crocker and Hawaiian Chips, for disappointing us. And we will be right back to disappoint you further after this word from Maximum Fun.
Welcome back to Fireside Chat on KMAX. With me in studio to take your calls is the dopest duo on the West Coast, Oliver Wong and Morgan Rhodes. Go ahead, caller.
Hey, I'm looking for a music podcast that's insightful and thoughtful, but like also helps me discover artists and albums that I've never heard of.
Yeah, man. Sounds like you need to listen to Heat Rocks. Every week, myself and I'm Morgan Rhodes and my co-host here, Oliver Wong, talk to influential guests about a canonical album that has changed their lives.
Guests like Moby, Open Mike Eagle, talk about albums by Prince, Joni Mitchell, and so much more.
Yo, what's that show called again?
Heat Rocks, deep dives into hot records.
Every Thursday on Maximum Fun.
It's new promo time, James.
Ooh, what you got, Aneke?
How about this? You need more black friends, Minority Corner, every Friday.
Okay, but girl, that doesn't say anything about how we're a podcast that talks about queer issues, race, politics, and pop culture.
Now it does, because I've already hit record.
Oh, girl, you so sneaky, you be Linda tripping me.
Minority Corner.
Learn, laugh, and play.
All from a perspective that's black, queer, and ladylike.
Because nobody puts minorities in the corner.
Every Friday.
Kind of that thing. All right, welcome back, all you nobodies out there listening. This is your friendly reminder to like us on Facebook at Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, where you can find the Thomas Coyne interactive map, behind-the-scenes videos and pictures, participate in some very serious research polls, and we might just read one of your posts on the air. And you know what? That page is fantastic. Tony Anita Hall has been wreaking some very entertaining havoc upon it. It's really worth your time to stop by.
She's great at that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, we'll say something on air isn't the right technical term, but you know what?
Yeah.
On the podcast, and then she'll bring it to life.
With an image.
With an image on Facebook.
Or a poll or something. Yeah, it's
very
great.
Clever.
Yeah.
She's a bright young gal.
Yeah.
You know, Adam, speaking of bright young gals, in order to keep casting the pod, we have to continue to grow our community of listeners. It's just a cold, hard business fact.
Yes.
And the best way to do that is simply word of mouth.
Mm-hmm.
But many of our listeners aren't certain how and when to have that talk with their friends and loved ones.
I see where this is going.
So I have created, Adam, some simple sample dialogue for our audience members to use.
I'm going to stop you right there. Because as you know, you never tell me what this is.
You stultify a lot of my simple sample dialogue.
I have been accused of stultifying. And I'm letting you know tonight, Paula Poundstone, even though I feel like your simple sample dialogue is always far too specific to be useful to any particular listener, tonight I am just going to try to enjoy your simple sample dialogue in the spirit in which it is intended.
Well, it's interesting that you say that because I tried to include some of your feedback
to
me in tonight's simple, simple
dialogue. You're not
going
to pull the football off me. You really have tried to include my feedback and make it a little more useful?
I have, yeah.
Okay. Wow. So, wow, that's really wonderful. Thank you, Paula Poundstone.
So, listener, you're with a friend, and such a conversation as this begins.
Okay.
Listener's friend, oh, my God, I can't believe you're running for Democratic presidential nomination. This is so exciting.
Well, that could be almost everybody, so I'm liking
and
this.
And look at all these buttons. Here's one. Anything's a step up. Excellent messaging. And let's make Vlad mad again. I love it. What made you decide to run? Listener, I listen to Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, the podcast. Listener's friend. Is it about politics? Listener, no, not really. But they once had a guest who was a body piercer, and they interviewed someone who worked in pest control. I know it sounds dry, but it's really fascinating and funny. The laughter lifts me up, and I come away from listening with a feeling of possibility. Listener's friend, that sounds great. I could really use that in my life. I was stuck in a well last week for days, and no one even stopped to help. Listener, I'm sorry to hear it. Here, take this button and join my campaign. Listener's friend, I'm voting for a nobody. That's powerful.
Wow. Wow. You know, I gotta say.
Do you see how I made it where it could be more people?
You did. I mean, there is almost an uncountable number of Democratic candidates for president.
Right, and we're not even to the primary.
And we're not
even
to the primary. This
could
become more. Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
so you could really see a listener's friend turning to the listener and saying, "Hey, you're running for the Democratic presidential nominee."
Right, and then I guess here it is. It has to be a Democratic candidate who's already listening and a fan of our podcast.
Exactly.
Which is
how we're going to grow the numbers.
Which is, again, very possible because, you know, there's a lot of Democratic candidates.
Yeah.
And then you turn to the I just fell down a well thing.
Right. Because I've had some listeners have written to me that they have fallen down a well.
But they haven't.
And they have. And
no, this
they
was
were
a previous
very,
sample
they were
dialogue.
Very grateful that someone came along with on their iPhone. They had already downloaded episodes of Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone.
Now this is a fantasy because this is a sample dialogue from about a month ago, and you had the listener's friend being stuck down a well, and the listener dropped the phone down with the podcast, and then you fabricated a letter with somebody saying that had happened, and now that same character is here in this sample dialogue here, and I'm not getting angry.
I'm very proud of you.
I consider this a step forward.
Because you see how when you get angry at Disneyland, you broke Space Mountain.
I didn't break Space Mountain.
And
I
you
was
realize
angry because
now,
it broke.
Yeah, and you realize now that was a mistake.
Wow.
And if you hadn't let your son jam that drumstick into
up.
The track like this,
you know, they are
very dangerous. Yeah. Very dangerous.
Okay, Anyway, thanks for that, Paula. Nobody's remember, you can always reach us at nobodylistenstopaulapoundstone@gmail.com.
And you can find me and Adam on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter.
That's right. And that's our show. Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone is hosted by Paula Poundstone and yours truly, Adam the Felber. Produced by Paula Poundstone, Adam Felber, Bonnie Burns, Ken Lezebnik, and Tony Anita Hull. Technical direction by Ray Horseman and mixing by Anthony Alfaro. Special thanks to tonight's house band, Omar Leyva, you were fantastic. And thanks again to our guest, Gary Wilson of the Gary Wilson Zoo Project. His credits aren't right in front of me, so that's all I have. Our head of security is Jonah Knuckles Glickman. Transcription services for the show provided by TranscribeMe. For your special Paula Poundstone discount, use code Paula Poundstone when placing your order at TranscribeMe.com.
That's our show for tonight. Won't somebody please listen to me?
Find a tail.
Help, I'm down a well.
Oh, you're not. Oh, you're not. Well, it's fake.
It Right, negative Louis Armstrong.
Well, it's a lie. I see trees of green, but I don't see a well.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.